Hi, welcome to Sci-Fi in Color, the podcast where we talk about science fiction TV and film that feature actors, directors, and writers of color.
If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at sfincolor@gmail.com. You can also find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Tumblr as SF in Color.
I'm Maggie.
And I'm Melissa.
And today we're talking about episode 5 of Sense8 Season 1, which is Art is Like Religion.
Ooh. Sounds like such a deep title.
It's a deep title. I don't know if it... I personally don't feel like it applied to the episode as a whole, though.
I agree, actually. It fits with some of the plot lines really, really well. And yes. I liked how it was kind of a theme that weaved in throughout. But in general, I feel like this show tries too hard to make their themes work for all 8 plot lines, and it just doesn't work.
I just didn't see art being a theme in for every Sense8. I know it doesn't have to be every Sense8, but I don't even see it as a theme for a majority of the Sense8s. I felt the theme of this episode was more on the side of choices, if that makes any sense.
I agree.
I thought choices was a theme of this episode. So when I went in to the episode knowing the title, I kind of expected, I don't know. I mean, I think every, like, film director or TV, I guess in this case, TV, not TV, Netflix, weirdness. I feel like everyone who's in film always does some kind of film or small episode or project or whatever about art, because that's what film is. Film is just another form of art. And like, so I expect this from filmmakers. There's always an art episode or an art movie or something. And I just didn't get that, which isn't to say it was a bad episode. It was just, you know, I don't know why they named it Art is Like Religion, because that wasn't the main focus.
You know, actually, my favorite application of art being like religion, where they reference that, is
okay.
When Will's friend is talking about the porn. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, we can get into that when we talk about Will, but that was, I mean, obviously, like, Leto is very much associated with this theme, but I just found that kind of
art or the porn.
Yeah, I found that just such an underrated moment and a different way to think about art.
Yeah, no, I definitely like that. I think because of our recording schedule and watching schedule, every time I jump back into Sense8, I kind of forget what happened and where we are. So then, like, half of the episode, I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. And then the multiple storylines is not really helping in that aspect.
What's going on?
Yeah, I swear, that song will never leave my head because of this show. So, like, but yeah, I definitely agree with the, like, equating porn to art. And then, yeah, people have, like, arguments over that, you know, in real life, where they talk about, oh, like, what separates, like, I guess, like, say, erotica from, like, porn, because erotica is, like, higher or more artsy or whatever. So, like, that's definitely an interesting conversation. I mean, you know, as we've seen through this show, they usually have some kind of sex scene or sex is mentioned, because, I mean, that's just how life is. Life does involve sex.
Some people.
But, well, yes, but, I mean, we wouldn't be here if our parents had sex. Like, I mean, sex is a necessary part of life. So, I guess what I'm getting at is, I was surprised that there wasn't really any, I don't know, let's say surprise. Usually I expect a sex scene or something in the show, because it seems like every episode there's a sex scene. We didn't get one this episode, but we do have the mention of the pornography, and we do have
the nudity.
I guess Wolfgang,
yeah,
swimming in a pool naked. So that's a thing.
Yeah,
but where? Oh yeah, so like, I know we started with the art was religion thing, and then somehow I got to this topic. I don't really know how I got here, but
that's okay.
Anyway, but yeah, I think, hold on. Yeah, let me wrap it back around. I think I got this.
Okay.
So, like, Leto, he's, you know, he's a, like, I guess, typical Mexican actor. Like, he has to play really hot, sexy male lead. And I guess, like, it's interesting how, like, that's supposed to, like, again, I guess acting is another form of art. And then you have also that has to be infused with, like, sex and whatnot. Anyway, I'm just trying to wrap all the themes together.
I don't know. I think they kind of played it enough in a lighthearted way that I didn't get bothered by it. But they definitely could have made it really pretentious. So I appreciate
the art thing or the sex thing or both?
I feel like both, but especially art thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they didn't really play it that way, so I'm going to just shout out to them, everyone.
Yeah, no, despite how, I guess, like, cheesy the line is, art is like religion, I actually really liked the way it was delivered in the episode during Leto's kind of shootout scene.
I loved that scene so freaking much.
It was such a great scene. It was so beautiful. But I'm talking about, like, before the shooting starts.
Yeah, yeah.
When the father starts talking about how art is like religion and some people, you know, value it highly, but other people think it's just, you know, trash or whatever. I was like, that is very, very true. And I also, like, just like how, like, that kind of ties into him, like, I guess, like, what, is he gonna steal the artifacts or whatever? So
I didn't keep any track of what was going on in their fake movie.
It didn't really matter. I mean, I guess what mattered was the actions and stuff, but... Yeah, I have despite this episode being kind of, for me, I felt like there wasn't any major stuff changing or happening. I think I thought a lot more about the show as a whole. So before we delve into that, like, anything that you want to say?
I mean, I think in general, the characters ended the show from, like, you know, just the episode. From beginning to end at a slightly different place, but there wasn't anything really dramatic happening.
Yeah.
I have already watched the show before, like I've mentioned on this podcast before, and I was actually convinced that there was going to be a major event that happened in this episode, and then the episode ended, and I'm like, and it didn't happen. And I was like, oh, I forgot how slowly this show moved sometimes.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Each person, except maybe Riley, she really hasn't had anything to do in, like, a really long time.
Yeah.
But most people, you know, had something going on. And I feel like there's still, I don't know, the show is so intentfully done that there aren't really any mistakes. But if there is a mistake, I think... they could shift around the balance of characters. So I feel like it should be... I like that they focus on one particular character or a few characters in each episode. But right. I don't like that we completely bounce out of some character's life for, like, episodes at a time.
Right, because, like, Riley, haven't gotten too much from her.
Yeah.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, basically.
Because I think... I feel like I need a list. Hold on. Let me look at my little internet movie database because that's very helpful. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. There they are. Okay, so, yeah. Of everyone, we really get very, very little of Riley. Because she had so much to do in the first couple episodes. And now she's kind of just like, meh. I guess we'll just cut to her every once in a while, chilling out, listening to music because why not?
Because DJ.
Because she's a DJ, and, you know, we can't show her doing any more sets. That's too much strain on our budget.
True that.
So let's just show her listening to stuff in a really horrible apartment building that's falling apart, flat, whatever, and then listening to her, you know, iPod or whatever.
But yeah, I mean, anything else before we get into it?
I mean, I have a general note about this show, I guess this is a good thing because I don't really get this feeling from most other shows that I watch, but maybe it's the genres that I view. But this show is kind of like, because there's so many interwoven plots, so much stuff going on, like, I never know what's going to happen, and I feel anxiety is not quite the term, but I feel like I always feel like an adrenaline rush every time I watch a show. because I don't know what's going on. I don't know at any moment a fight scene or whatever could break out. So I'm just kind of sitting in anticipation, waiting for craziness to happen. And, like, the ominous music does not really help. So, like, I definitely notice, like, every episode I start going, like, oh my gosh, what's gonna happen? And, like, whereas, like, I feel like even with other shows that are in maybe some kind of horror or action or thriller kind of genre, like, there are, like, breather moments where you can just kind of chill out and relax. Mm-hmm. But I feel like I don't get that from this show, which is something new. It's neither great or horrible. It's just, that's how I react to this show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess the music cues that are just like, don't make me feel too good. But yeah, like, even the intro, the long intro, right? With all the ominous music, I like that because it, like, sets the tone and sets the mood for the show. And then I'm just, like, thrust into this world where I'm like, I don't know, anything could happen at any time. Like, knives could start flying and guns could start going on. And, like, so, sorry. I know I've been, like, rambling this entire 10 minutes. But, again, this episode for me was a little bit, it felt like not much was happening. So I started thinking more about how I felt about the show overall.
I think that's good. I think, in general, maybe it's because it's a Netflix show, but it doesn't follow any of the established patterns that American television generally falls into with rising and falling action.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've watched other types of shows before, and when shows don't fall into those patterns, it becomes much more surprising because, you know, within the first 5 to 10 minutes of a regular show, you can kind of figure out what's going to happen. Not exactly how the plot's going to be resolved or, you know, exactly, but you can tell, okay, so these are the different beats that the show is going to hit. This is the villain that they're going to deal with. This is, you know, the characters that are going to get the focus. And Sensei kind of throws all those rule books out the window.
Yes.
And I think maybe if I'd watched it a few years ago, I wouldn't have appreciated it that much. But I think I've started becoming more comfortable with different formats of TV, and it's nice. I think we should break the mold more often.
Yeah. No, it leads to a very interesting viewing experience. Because, like I said, like, I don't get this kind of sense of adrenaline. Like, I really don't know what's going to happen to Caffeus. I know he's not going to die because he's a main character, but, like, other than that rule, I really don't know if he's going to get those drugs back or whatever. I guess if they mention him, why not?
Let's dive into
start
Caffeus.
Talking about Caffeus's little thing. So he has to deliver the bag of coconuts.
Yeah, coconut.
To the, I guess, drug lord, gangster, whatever.
Yeah. How did the coconuts, like, bang together and make coconut sounds? That was my big question.
Asking the real important questions here, Melissa.
Clearly.
I don't know what was going... I mean, again, because of how I watch the show, I don't watch it the way it's meant to be watched. I don't binge watch it. I watch it one episode every, like, couple weeks, and I'm like, I don't remember what has happened.
That's too bad, actually.
Yeah, I guess I'm kind of... I have to... Like, I actually have to go through and watch it, binge watch it like I'm supposed to. But yeah, he gives him, I'm trying to remember, in the last episode, he gave him the bag, and I guess it's interesting, Caffeus never looks inside the bag. He never questions, like, what could this possibly be? So I guess that is a good quality to, a good quality to have if you're going to be working for a gangster.
I would say,
like, you're not questioning, you know, not trying to figure out what's inside. Like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Like, whatever, yes, I'm just going to do it. So, it doesn't reflect very well on Caffeus, but I guess it works for
Caffeus, the gangster. I struggle a lot with Caffeus, honestly. I think he's kind of my least favorite of the lot. Mm. And I think the reason is that his motivations are so singular, especially in the beginning. You know, all he wants to do is get the medicine for his mother. He just, that is literally all he wants to do. Mm-hmm. That's his motivation, and everything he does is going to bring him closer to that moment. And I don't know, it's just...
It's simplistic? Is that
I guess so, yeah.
Is that what you mean by singular?
Singular?
Is that what you mean
by singular? No, it's completely focused.
Oh, okay. Right, there's not other stuff tugging him around.
No, I mean, you do get, like, some other characters interacting with him, but all of them are to further that one idea, essentially.
Oh, I see. Right. Unlike, I guess, Cassius's guiding son, or, is that what you mean?
Hmm?
Like, okay. I got you. I mean, couldn't you say the same about Riley?
I wouldn't, but that's not because of other things.
Oh,
because,
you know what happens later?
Yeah, sorry.
Okay. Okay. No. It's totally cool. Obviously, we're going to be talking about this episode alone and not the future one. So, yeah. That's fine. But, yeah. I just feel like with other characters, yeah, other stuff is going on with them. It just seems like Cassius has the bus company and then the mom. But then that's really, those are kind of simple. Son has, like, what she has... She has, her fighting. You know, her family, and then she has, like, you know, her fighting skills. She just seems more complex.
Yeah, I mean, she has the relationship with her brother, she has the relationship with her father and with her mother, even though her mother has passed. And
with the guy who's training her.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, she has to kind of come to this decision, which is very difficult for her. And even though Cassius also has to come to the decision... I never really questioned whether he would go through with it.
Yeah.
Because, again, singular focus. But...
Yeah, I just feel like, I don't know if he's, like, is he seeing the larger picture? Like, this guy's going to call upon him for worse favors, and it's not going to go very well. So I'm just like, Cassius, like, you're, like, you know, skipping around, like, with joy that you got the medicine, but, like, your joy is not going to last very long, because he's going to call on you again to do something... dangerous and drastic, so...
Maggie, stop being a realist.
I'm just saying, no, man. Yeah, I'm just saying. Because he talks about choices, and I do think that's... You know, like, in terms of Cassius, I like, teared up and cried a little during that scene where he talked about his mother protecting him.
Yeah.
Or, like, you know, brandishing the little knife versus, like, all the 10, 15 people outside the house with machetes. Like, I'm not gonna lie, I teared up a little bit. I liked that scene a lot, and I really enjoyed his conversation with Sun, but...
Same.
I mean, Cassius is a pretty, he has a pretty simplistic plot, so it is kind of like, I don't know, like, let's go back to more interesting characters, shall we?
Yeah.
I did laugh when he tried to, like, do his faux kung fu.
That was kind of amazing. I mean, I guess the thing about Cassius is that I think he's most interesting when he's crossing over with other characters. So, right. I mean, in the beginning, he has a crossover with Riley, which was really, really cute. I really liked that.
The tea thing, yeah, and the Harry Potter thing?
The Harry Potter thing.
I did like that a lot, yeah. It was kind of like... I really liked that exchange because it was kind of like how when you're thinking about people from other countries... You have a very simplistic kind of stereotypical view of these people.
Yeah.
It was so perfect. I don't know, like, I really love that exchange. Yeah. Like, the Harry Potter, the Queen, tea, and it's like, you're from Africa, and he's like, no, Nairobi. And I was like, that's so perfect. Like, I feel like I see these exchanges all the time online and in real life, and I'm just like, shake my head. You know nothing about other countries, but, like, why would you? Because you've lived in this country probably your whole life. So, I don't know. I really like that scene a lot, too.
Yeah, it felt very genuine. Like, a lot of the show is kind of dark, and there were a lot of kind of lighthearted moments in this particular episode.
Mm-hmm.
So, I appreciate that. I mean, in a different world, Sensei could be a very lighthearted show. But it's not, because life is sad.
Do you think I personally like it this way. I like the darkness. I don't think it's, like, dark and... No. I mean it in like, some things are dark and gritty for no reason, but this doesn't feel like one of those shows or movies where it's dark and gritty for no reason.
I would like to come back to this question at the end of the season.
Ooh. Okay. Okay. All right. I have to write it down, though, because I'm going to forget. Like, I've forgotten all the other episodes of Sense8.
So true. So true.
All right. So, Cassius, yeah, he does his thing, delivers the drugs, does weird little meetups with Riley and Sun.
I really like, there's this moment when he has the bag and the gangsters are about to attack him. And he starts moving his foot like he's gonna, like, do something super badass.
Right, right,
and there's, like, this question of, like, did he retain her skills? And, like, no. They answer it so definitively in, like, 20 seconds, and they're like, nope. But
and he's just like, no, what was this, like, didn't the guy make a pun? He was like, Van Damme, Van something. I can't remember what it was.
Something, I don't remember.
But he totally, like, they trounced him both, like, physically and just, like, verbally. They just, like, destroyed him, and it was so great. I knew it was a test, though.
Did you?
Like, I feel like I had some, like, niggling thoughts in the back of my mind going, is this a test? I feel like this is a test. And so when then the head gangster guy said, I was testing you, I was like, yeah.
Because, like, I figured that
it just seems so convenient that they exactly found him in that one spot. So, I don't know. I just was like, in the back of my head, I was like, this could be a test. This could be a test.
And it was. Yeah, I kind of suspected that as well. But, you know, we're gonna...
The show can't be 100% unpredictable. Then we just wouldn't like it.
That's very true. Because
then it would be illogical.
That's very true. But, I mean, is anything more about Cassius, really?
I don't think so. I think if you want to start talking about... I'm trying to skim through and see if I have any more notes, but I think that's basically it. Do you want to start talking about, I guess...
Sunbok?
Sun, since she's kind of related.
Hmm? Yeah.
She's kind of related to his story, so we could start talking about her.
Yeah. I mean, and maybe a transition point would be the scene that they have together.
Yes, I really like that scene.
That's one of my favorite scenes in the whole show, actually. And
it's beautifully done.
Yeah, it's so good. It hits everything. It looks great. They're both kind of at a crossroads, and they're both at very similar but very different points. And they kind of both come to the same conclusion, which is kind of cool as well, which is that, you know, family is the most important thing to them. I mean, it's a little more complicated, but essentially that they're going...
Well, if you guys have seen the episode, hopefully you understand what we're talking about. So.
And I really like that. And it's funny because, you know, I watched Sense8 about a year ago now, and I retained very, very little of it, especially because I think by the time I got to, like, the sixth episode, I basically binge-watched. I watched slowly, you know, through the beginning, and then I got hooked at one point, and then I just watched through. So, again, retained very little. But this particular scene is one of the ones that really sticks out in my head because it's just such a perfect circumstances of two characters who would never, ever have had the opportunity to speak. And yet they were able to kind of grant each other insight.
Right. Do you think that... I felt like it was mainly Cassius advising Sun and not the other way around, but I don't know how you interpreted that.
No, I kind of agree, but I think in giving her advice, he kind of became more confident in his own choices.
I see. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Sometimes it's easier to give other people advice than to figure out your own life.
Oh, how true that is. How true that is. So, we have their scene where they're walking through a crowd, and they kind of end up meeting in the middle.
Yeah.
I liked it so much. And it was just so interesting seeing again, like, you have this rather homogenous Korean society and this rather homogenous Kenyan society. And then you just have, like, a random Korean in the Kenyan society and a random Kenyan in the Korean... It was so, I don't know, visually interesting.
It was. To
have that happen. Because it's so homogenized, like, if they weren't in the other person's body or whatever, they would probably be stared at or whatever. But then, no, they're just kind of freely walking towards each other. You're right. Like, it was such a... It was so perfect. Like, even though, for me, this episode, nothing happened, quote-unquote, like, this episode gave us some very beautiful... dare I say artsy...
Oh, artsy you said
shots. But yeah, I really liked that scene too. And I liked how, you know, they talked, they walked apart. I love how, like, Sun is just reasoning with her hallucination. She's like, yes, I would prefer for you to let me, to step aside and let me walk.
Yeah,
with you.
Exactly.
And he was like, okay. I was like, this is a perfect Sun. Like, this, it was such a, like,
it was a
God, do I love character driven action. Like, it's so great.
It was, like, a classic moment, like, and I really liked, like, the colors of the two places were so contrasted.
Okay, so I was trying to focus on that, too. How was it contrasted? Explain. Because I felt like it wasn't that contrasted, but you, go ahead.
I don't remember. I mean, okay, so, I feel like the Korean... side of things was very kind of sterile.
Right, we've talked about this before.
Yeah, and then the Kenyan side was much more earthy tones, kind of.
Yeah, definitely. I remember we did discuss this in a previous episode, but I'll just bring it up again. It kind of follows the whole... Well, I say Inception because that's what I think of, but I know Inception wasn't the first one to do this. The Inception color scheme thing where... every world or every level is a different color scheme, so you can easily distinguish who, I guess in this case, who you're with, or in right. Inception's case, where you are. And they definitely keep that up throughout the show. I mean, Korea, the show is a very sterile place, so I don't know how I feel about that. I've never been, so maybe it really does look like that. But, I mean, again, it's film, it's art, you do things.
Yeah.
For, in this case, to separate where or who we are with.
Yeah.
Yeah, sterile. And then Nairobi is more, like, yellows, earthy tones. Yeah, definitely. I just felt in the crowd scene, specifically in the crowd scene, when Sun and Kathis are walking towards each other, they purposefully kept the backgrounds sort of on the same level of color.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember... trying to look for that. I was trying to look for the contrast between the earthy gold yellow tones and the kind of sterile white gray black kind of tones in the Korean scenes. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but like they were more similar. I thought there was a lot of black and whites going black, white, and gray
mm-hmm.
going on in the scene when they're walking towards each other. Just because it'd be weird if you kept going from like gold to like mm-hmm. white and gold to white, and, you know. But yeah, it was just like kind of focusing on, like, again, Asian woman in a sea of, like, Africans and then African guy in a sea of, like, Asians. Like, I don't know. I was trying to pay close attention to that, so I don't think... I think when they merge worlds like that, it's kind of less contrasty.
Mm, yeah.
Does that make sense?
When I'm watching, actually, like, they'll have, like, a transition scene. You know, mm-hmm. like, sometimes they'll, like, kind of go over the city or whatever.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of times I try and guess where we are. And it's, like,
yeah.
it's quick enough that usually I can't. Which, I don't know. Maybe that doesn't speak well for my own geography skills. But, like, it's establishing and it kind of gets you back into, like, the right tone. But it's not
right.
really... Like, the scene when Leto is in traffic, And he has that whole thing. Right. There's, like, this transition scene, like, before we actually see Leto. And I was like, who mm-hmm. are we in now? And I didn't know until we saw Leto.
Yeah, I agree. I had that same problem when we first see Wolfgang. We just see the back of his head.
Yeah.
I don't know if we got a... pretty sure they're called establishing shots. That's the film term. Because fancy. It's not even that fancy. It's just more like when you're going to a different place, you kind of need, say, like a shot of the outside of the house. If you're talking about like a sitcom. Right. You see this all the time in a sitcom.
Yeah.
You know, you're going from work to the house. There's always a shot of the house and then you enter the house, or a shot of the work of the office building and then you enter the office building. Like, it's like a very conventional thing to do, and it's helpful because it helps the viewer not be confused. But I mean, this is Sense8, so I think the viewer's supposed to be confused when they watch Sense8.
Confusion is kind of the name of the game.
Yeah. So I know I had the problem with Wolfgang because I wasn't sure who I was looking at because it was the back of his head, and I was like,
the back of your head,
you sly dogs, trying to confuse the viewers. Ugh. Anyway,
back to Sun.
Yeah. So establishing shots. Let's go back to Sun. So she and Leto start off the episode, and she's getting out of bed with her dog. We didn't see her dog at all in the previous episodes.
No, but her dog is really cute.
I know, he's so cute.
Oh my gosh, is so cute.
And then like, it was like a nice touch to make her feel, not that I'm going to say that Sun didn't feel human in the previous episodes, but it just made her feel more like a person, just to see her having a pet and taking care of it, because it feels like she is like 90% of the time all business, so it was kind of nice to see her be a little more gentle, I guess. Does that make any sense?
It's actually interesting you said it vulnerable. Like that, because the thing that I thought that you were going to say was that you were leading into that she was menstruating.
No, but you can start talking about that if you would like.
Because I think that also kind of humanizes her as well.
Oh, now I totally understand what was going on in the first episode. I mean, beginning of the episode.
Okay.
Wow, that totally went over my head. Like, crazy.
Wait, really?
Now I feel like an idiot. Because I thought I saw her putting in a tampon or something, but then I kind of just... Hey, the problem is I don't really deal too much with pain, so... Anyway, this got really personal all of a sudden. Let's like not go there. But anyway, moving past this topic, I totally did not realize she was on her period. And I feel dumb because now I totally understand why Leto was like freaking out. Because I was going to ask you, like, why was he freaking out? And I'm like, I get it now.
Oh, Froggy Bear.
And now you're staring at your own dog.
Hi. Hi, Froggy. How does everyone get into the same tone when they talk to their pets?
It's the tone you'd use when you talk to babies. It's a higher pitched tone.
Oh, hi. He's on my bed right now, and his head is like right near my pillow. He's looking at me. Sorry, we can get back to it. Anyway,
but that's like the tone that you take when you talk to babies. So essentially, you think of your dog as a baby, which is probably not too far from the truth.
He's so cute. Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, Sun, I didn't realize she was on her period, and now that you've explained it, I feel stupid, but I totally understand now.
That's okay. Yeah, I really liked that. I mean, it was kind of used to humanize her, so I really liked that piece of it. And I don't know if she was able to, like, pass off some of her symptoms to Leto instead, but that would be, that would be very helpful.
Poor Leto, though.
He
was not dealing with that well.
No, he wasn't. It must have been very confusing.
I know it's a completely different, person that I'm talking about, but it kind of, just you talking about, you know, the period and how it affected Leto for some reason, kind of reminded me a little bit of later on when we get to Nomi's bit where her mom's all talking on the phone to Will about like oh, I think those hormones did something to her. And I was like, I could see a bit of a link to the very beginning with the period. Because the hormones that are from someone else are affecting Leto. So it's like, ooh.
Hormones are very scary. Making connections.
Hormones are very scary.
No, but like actually they super are.
I mean, yeah, they can change your body. I mean, like crazy if you put enough of them in your body. So, yeah, hormones are finicky things. And
let me completely overshare. Actually, you know what? Let's not.
This is a TMI cast, guys. So, let's not. Okay, so back to Sun. She, I guess, wakes up in the morning, has a lot of pain. And then she decides to see her trainer, I guess, is the right after?
Yes. And, okay. You know, she's balancing the cup on her arm. And we get a dog shot. And it's so cute. Oh, my gosh.
That's all that mattered in this episode.
I mean, let's be real. If you have a cute dog, everything else is okay.
Well, Sun's life is not okay, and she has a cute dog, so...
Well, she has to give away the dog. That is...
Well, yeah, I guess that's how we know. We know it's gonna get worse, because she had to give away
right.
the dog.
So, her teacher tells her to make a decision and then come back to her. So she's really at... This is really crunch time for her. This is when she...
I feel like it was crunch time a long time ago.
Okay, well, this is...
You know?
This is the point of no return.
Because Mr. Jong or whatever was calling her like crazy like one or two episodes ago.
Well, this is the point of no return where...
Yeah, she has to decide.
She has to make a decision. And so it's nice that Cassius was kind of there to talk her through that decision. But, you know, it was still her decision to make. And even though it's not that I saw... I feel like when I was first watching it, I felt like it could kind of go either way with her. I didn't know what she was going to do. And I kind of was a little disappointed the way that she actually decided to go.
I was disappointed but not surprised. Because everything was pointing to her going through with her going to prison. I wish she didn't choose that, but I wasn't surprised when she did. So
I feel like, you know, it could be very difficult when one of your sensates are in prison. That could be bad.
Yeah. I mean, Jonas is in prison and he seems to be doing relatively fine.
He's
so.
Living it up.
Sure. Living it up with the guys with the gas masks on their face and all that. But I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what to expect if she does the prison route because... Again, Netflix already has Orange is the New Black. I don't need to see that ish again. Also, I'm so pumped for, like, the next season that's coming out in a couple weeks. But I just don't want to see another prison show, really, unless they bring something new and interesting to it. I mean, I just want her brother to take the fall, man. I just want her brother to take the fall.
Yeah. I mean, I think...
But I know the company's important, so...
Well, I think there's a few aspects of it for me. I mean, for one... Karma, and her brother is kind of a jerk. Okay, not kind of. Definitely a jerk. But then another piece of it is kind of what you're talking about. It's like, when you remove her from her family and fighting and all the things that kind of make her interesting, what does she become?
Well, I mean, she can fight her way through prison. That's no problem there. But, again, I'm just thinking Orange is the New Black. I know you've seen the show, so you know what's going to happen and what to expect. Yes. But, like, I don't see... If she ends up going to prison, she will be okay. But I'm not really interested in that.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in seeing her fight other inmates or whatever. I don't know. I want her to see all the other sensates and... figure this thing out, and when are we ever going to get back to the main plot with the very first person who died in the beginning of the episode? Like, come on, guys! Let's get this show on the road! Like, I want to get back to the... I mean, everyone, I know you said everyone had their own little storyline to resolve, but I kind of want to get to the overarching Jonas thing. Because we didn't get much of that this episode. We got it, quite a bit of it last episode, but not this episode.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about any more things about Sunbok? I'm just trying to skim through my stuff and see if there's
It's difficult to talk about each character individually as they start interacting more, but...
Yes.
So, you know, like, sometimes I'll have a character's notes completely in the wrong section because they're busy talking to another character. So, that's all I have for Sun. We may be seeing more of her in a few minutes, but for this moment...
Yeah, I mean, I'll talk to her a little... I have a couple more notes about her. I thought... I was confused about how everyone... of all the other sensei she got into contact with, knew she was Korean, but then when Cafius was like, somehow, I just know your name is Sun, I was like, oh, they just... Because we talked about this in other podcasts, episodes. Characters shouldn't just know things. They need to be told things. But in this show, the people who are connected just have to know things. Like, this is an okay exception to that rule. So... I was like, huh, how does everyone know she's Korean? And then Cafia says, I just knew your name was this, and this, and this, and this. And I was like, oh, like, that's how they know she's Korean, because,
well, I mean,
you know, they have this connection.
It's kind of nice not to have to explain the same thing seven different times. Again. As each person starts interacting with each other, the other people.
But also just makes sense that the sensates would have a connection. Yeah. I mean, if they can absorb fighting skills, they can certainly absorb basic things like information about the person's name or who they are or whatever. And then I liked how the sensates, for the most part, revert to their native language when they start talking to each other. Again, I know, obviously, if I had just binge-watched it, it would make a lot more sense and be a lot more coherent for me, but I kind of forgot. I was like, how are they understanding each other? I was like, oh, wait. Duh.
Yeah.
They're sensates. That's the explanation for everything. They're sensates.
Yeah.
In the same cluster. So, even though Sun is talking Korean and Cafia is speaking in Swahili, they understand each other, and they're like, wait, you speak Korean? No. Wait, you speak Swahili? No. How is this working?
Yeah. I think it's actually kind of interesting. I just thought of when I watched the episode, it's almost like, as viewers, we're in the cluster with them.
Yes.
Because, like, they're speaking English, even though that's not what they're speaking, you know? But to us, it sounds like English because we're in the cluster with them. Do you want to move on to Nomi?
Is Nomi connected to Sun?
No.
I believe Kala's slightly connected to Sun.
Yeah, that's true.
Let's go to her?
Yeah, Kala's fine.
Okay, let's go to Kala. Okay, so with Kala, let's talk about Kala since she has a bit of a scene with Sun. Sun's doing the water balancing thing, and at the same time, Kala is getting Mendy done on her hand in preparation for the wedding. And I really liked the use of color in Kala's scene. There's a lot of very rich reds and greens. Again, this is film TV, and this is good film and TV. So, like, the use of color is very deliberate. Everyone in the, I don't know if you'd call it a bridal party or whatever, was wearing red. And it just, visually this show is so stunning. I love it. And, you know, she's asking her mom about how did she feel when she met her dad and all this other stuff. And I really like Kala's scenes and her storyline. Mm-hmm. Even though it's like this stereotypical, arranged marriage gone wrong storyline.
Yeah.
I do appreciate, like, the understated kind of emotions of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just small details that are, like, really heartbreaking, like her father making a really delicious dish, and then all of a sudden, you know, she's like, oh, I love this, can you teach, you know, my husband to make this, or my future husband to make this, and he's like, yeah, no, and it's just, like, that heartbroken look on her face. I was just like, little moments like that just really made the show for me. I really like that.
I mean, I think... one of the best moments for me in her section is saying that, you know, Kala is the first person in the family to marry for love. and everyone kept talking about how, you know, she was, you know, the couple is a perfect match, and the astrologer saw many children. Anyway.
Oh, I thought I interpreted that comment again. I kind of defer to you since you've watched it twice, but I thought the woman who made that, the aunt who made the comment about, oh, the astrologer saw many children, was talking about herself and laughing about it. But I think your interpretation makes more sense. Because the way I interpreted it was the auntie was saying, oh, when I got married, the astrologer said I would have a lot of children, and that's totally not the case, ha ha ha. But I see what you're saying. You're saying that the astrologer
predicted that Kala would have many children. Yeah. But I really liked...
In any case, I think both are wrong.
Perhaps. But I really liked that, I think it's Kala's mother who says that she's the first person in the family to marry for love. And I'm like, no.
Yeah, and then you can see on Kala's face, she's just like, no.
I mean, she looks absolutely miserable. Like, she does not hide it at all.
That's right. See, that is, like, that's a big thing for me, right?
Yeah.
It's like, she, even though she doesn't say anything, she's so clearly reacting to these things and looks upset, like, 90% of the time. I'm like, are people just ignoring how she feels, even though she, I know she doesn't say it, right? So yeah. Whatever. That's on her to make it clear to other people. But, and I know there's a lot of pressure on her, but I'm just like, how does no one see that she's, like, about to cry over, like, everything that's being said? I'm like, it gives me a weird feeling that she's, like, ignored most of the time, which is so strange.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But I don't, yeah, it's like, I'm trying to figure out if that's supposed to be how we read it. Like, everyone around her is ignoring how she feels. Or is it just because she just doesn't say anything and that's why people think she's fine? Like,
I don't know, because,
it could be many things.
Because I don't know if we kind of get a special insight into her. Because, right. You know, if we go on the theory that we're kind of, as viewers, in the cluster, and we kind of can see more of Kala, and we know how she's feeling, but maybe other people kind of don't. Maybe it's not as clear to them. I don't know.
Right, yeah, I understand. Like, film, TV, visual medium, you have to show the viewer stuff from time to time. Like, yeah.
I don't know, I don't know.
It seems unclear whether we're supposed to think that she's being ignored, or if it's just, like, she won't say anything and that's why this is all happening. I mean, obviously, if she said something, then they would be a completely different story, right? But she's chosen to stay silent up until she collapses at the end. So that's a thing that happens.
Yeah. It's actually kind of interesting. It may, like, when the older women were telling the stories and, you know, the different things about the spices on the lips and all these other things, mm-hmm. I just kept thinking about, like, the age of the people in the cluster. Like all of our main characters, I wouldn't say they're necessarily, like, at a transitional period of their life, at least not all of them, but I feel like they're all kind of having to claim their own kind of independence. And I mean, it's all being done in very different ways, but, like, you've got Wolfgang, who is trying to come out from the shadow of his father. And you have, you know, Kala, who's potentially going into marriage. And you have, you know, who else? I had another person.
Well, Nomi is separating from her biological family.
Yeah. And Cafius is kind of taking charge of his own life.
Yeah. And I think even that works with Leto and Will, because, like, they're part of these... Well, I would say Will is part of this organization that doesn't really appreciate people going off doing their own thing. And Leto is kind of... Instead of just kind of going with what the director is saying, yeah. He's kind of making suggestions. So I think independence and choices and agency are all pretty prominent themes in this episode. I'm trying to think, is there anything else I wanted to say about Kala? I talked about the colors.
But it was kind of, not funny, but like, when she's eating and she's making like those happy faces, I'm like, this is happier than we've ever seen her.
Right?
Like, that's a problem.
That is a huge problem. If the happiest she's ever been is just eating food.
Though, I mean, I eat food, and I love food, so I do get it a little bit, Kala. Like, it's okay.
Yeah.
But it doesn't speak well of her husband-to-be.
Right? And then, I think, in terms of the husband, I mean, we already knew from previous episodes, right? He wanted the ceremony shortened. He's very much into, you know, other, like, non-Indian, like, Western kinds of things, and I made a note about how he has, like, a marching band, and he's riding in on a motorcycle. That just seems very, like, not traditional.
They've been riding in on motorcycles for 3,000 years. Don't be disrespectful.
But you know what I mean. It's like, the marching band was like, I was like, what is going on here? Because I started hearing, like, tubas and horns, and I'm like, wait a minute, isn't this a wedding? And then I was like, oh, wait, but it's this guy. So, like, of course he wouldn't have, like, your traditional musicians or whatever. And then the motorcycle was just, like, the icing on top. I was like, really, dude? You're gonna roll in on a motorcycle? Like, ugh. But anyway, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of attention to detail in the show, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Because you can just see, like, it's also character-driven, and I love it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what we didn't talk about is the Kala Wolfgang bathroom swap.
Oh, right. Yeah, and then the whole thing at the end, and all, okay.
Let's go there. So that happened.
Bathroom swap. Okay, I thought you had actual notes on the bathroom swap. Again, having the whole people speaking in their native languages, which I find very interesting, and then other people going like, what or who are you talking about? I'm just going to say it right now. You know Wolfgang's friend's going to screw up. You know Felix is going to screw up. Everything, all signs point to him screwing Wolfgang over in the future, or being dead, or something. So, good job foreshadowing that. Writers, good job. In terms of Kala's thing, I think I liked her little interaction with her aunt.
Yeah.
That was like a fun, lighthearted interaction. That's what the internet for is a quote for the ages.
Yeah.
I loved it. I think it's it's really interesting how like different people in the cluster are at different levels of understanding what's going on.
Yeah.
It makes for a very interesting experience.
Shout out to Will for getting things.
Yeah, Will basically understands what's happening. Nomi, on the other hand, is, like, pretty far away from figuring out what's happening.
I feel like she's kind of on the other end of the spectrum because she's been told wrong information.
Yeah.
And so,
which will screw her up so
I feel like
much.
That's probably worse than not knowing what's going on.
Yeah. And I think my last really remark for Kala's section is, you know, I guess marriage is supposed to be like a symbolic joining of peoples, right? And I think it's interesting how this is juxtaposed with like how the cluster is joined.
Interesting.
If that makes any sense. Because she's supposed to join with this, I can't remember his name, but she's supposed to join with this guy in marriage, and then Wolfgang is like, don't do it. Which is great. He's like, and she's just like, crotch shot, because obviously you just have to throw it in there, because, you know, why not? I was thinking, like, why is this guy swimming naked? Like, is this a thing Germans do, like, regularly? I have no idea. I have no idea if this is, like, a normal thing. But, I mean, in the end, it didn't really matter, because apparently the shock of seeing him would have been negated if he was wearing clothes in the end of that episode. Like, I don't know.
Well, I mean, I really liked how the, you know, the bombastic wedding ceremony was really contrasted with different pieces of other people's clusters. Like, I mean, at first it's kind of contrasted with Sun, who is, you know, giving the dog to her teacher, and like both of them are going into prisons of their own choosing, and and they also look equally happy.
It's horrible, but it's so true. Like, they're choosing to walk into this cage.
Yeah. So it's so, like, sad.
It is. And I think it's very, very obvious that the directors are making this much about women being, or choosing to go into these cages.
Yeah.
And, like, admittedly, most of the guys are not. You could kind of make that case for Caphias, like.
Yeah.
But that leads me into my next point, which is about Max, if that's okay with you. Was there any more notes about
Kala? I'm still on Kala.
Okay, go on to Kala.
I mean, in the way that Kala is mixed matching with Wolfgang, and so, like, I really like and we talked a little bit about it, but the juxtaposition between her service and the utter simplicity of Wolfgang, just kind of chilling out in the pool, swimming, you know, naked, and
I kind of thought, you know, because there's transference of, like, emotions and stuff, I thought maybe it's kind of like him swimming serenely in a swimming pool is maybe helping her get through the ceremony and stay calm, you know. But
I don't have any way at all.
We don't have any definitive proof of that, but I feel like it's a potential interpretation of what was going on until, you know,
everything he goes decides down,
What?
Everything goes down.
Okay, yeah, until he's like,
what?
You don't love him, why are you doing this?
Basically. Like, I love how he is, like, he's in the pool, and he's just completely free, like, he's controlling his own movements and all of the, like, the ripple effect of in the pool, like, everything is created by his own body, and, like, you know, she is, you know, completely trapped and can't do any of the movements that she wants to, which probably involve running away, but then, you know, he shows up and he is all like, you're not in love with him, and I'm all like, oh, it's so cute.
Ah, OTP! OTP!
And then Kala is all like, I'm gonna pass out now because I want to leave, but I don't know how to leave. So, let's be real. That's a pretty useful skill to have.
Passing out on command.
Yeah!
She didn't pass out on command, though. She did talk about how everything was so heavy. And you can see it, like...
No. I know. I know she didn't do it intentionally. But, like, it would be so convenient.
Let me pass out now.
Like, I would abuse that so much.
You would.
Yeah, I would.
You avoidant person. Anyway. But, yeah, what I was going to say, if we're okay to move on to Matt... I keep calling him by his actor's name. If we're good with moving on to Wolfgang.
Yes.
Any more notes about Kala? Are you good?
Nope. Wolfgang. Okay.
So, what I was trying to segue into before was, you know, we see Sun and we see Kala kind of walk into a prison, metaphorically.
Yeah.
And I know I mentioned Caphias kind of is walking into a bit of a trap with the gangster, but I also feel like Wolfgang is kind of in a sticky situation because, you know, he walks into his uncle's place and his uncle has a nice, pleasant chat with him. And I thought, like, this is what I wrote down. This is what I call walking into the dragon's den. And I feel like I see this a lot. I don't know. There's got to be a trope name for it. It's not coming to mind right now. But it's, like, it's always that scene in a movie or show, right? Where, like, they walk into, like, some evil scheming person's lair. Yep. And this person's like, did you do this? Did you cross me? Mm-hmm. And they have to keep the poker face on and be like, I don't know what you're talking about. And then walk out. I mean, Wolfgang wasn't quite like that. I feel like his, oh, I'm smarter than my father, it could be interpreted as, I did crack the safe, or it could be interpreted as, I'm smart enough to not try to crack the safe.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, ambiguous. That was kind of ambiguous and kind of nicely done on his part, but his uncle's got his eye on him, and, like, I'm glad that Wolfgang is being hyper-vigilant and, well, not hyper-vigilant, but being somewhat vigilant about these things and telling Felix to shut the heck up. But, yeah, there's always that moment where, you know, you have to deal with the evil, conniving, powerful person and keep your poker face on. And I was like, I see you, Wolfgang. Yeah. Like, you're not in a good situation. You better leave Germany, like, stat.
I really like that, you know, like, we have these characters who are walking into their own prisons, essentially, and he is a safe cracker. Yeah. That came out wrong.
No, I see what you mean. Like, he's getting things out.
Yeah.
Rather than, being locked up. Yeah. So it's like a weird, another weird juxtaposition. Very in this show.
And,
good juxtaposition. Also, like, a weird good juxtaposition.
I can't remember if this had been established already, but the diamonds that Wolfgang stole were from Mumbai.
Yeah, I thought that was like, oh, again, the Kala connection. Wait, what if it has something to do with the husband? Sorry, I just got, like, really excited all of a sudden. Mind blown.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was, like, all these connections, and then we had before the previous episode how, you know, Kala's company is talking about fake medicines, and then Caffeus is, has bought the fake. It's all interwoven, and exactly. I love it. And I have to say, I also really love the set design for Wolfgang's uncle's place.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. It was so good. And you just got a huge sense of the kind of man his uncle is.
And also,
so I really appreciate
his bathrobe thing.
Yes.
That was super rad.
So yeah, if we want to move on, I think Wolfgang is really only connected to Kala in this episode.
He didn't get that much to do except for Kala-related things.
Yeah. Because I know Kala was also connected to Nomi.
Yeah.
And she has a very small portion of this episode. Yeah, Nomi
doesn't get too much to do either.
Right, because Kala is like, oh, this dessert tastes so good. And then Nomi's like, why does my coffee taste different now? This is weird.
Oh.
Yeah, that's a connection
between those two. Actually interpreted that completely differently. No, I mean, I understood that there was a connection between the two of them, but I thought that, like, it was like Nomi's tastes were changing. Like, you know how everyone has a different, like, measure of, like, how sweet they can tolerate?
Yes, you know? Yes.
And, like, some people are, like, they'll have, like, a bajillion sugars in their coffee and it won't even be, like, sweet and they'll just be whatever. But I kind of thought that was happening, that she had, like, one of the other, like, sensates, like, flavor preferences in her mouth. So the coffee that she was drinking, which was super normal for her, then became very, very sweet because Americans drink sweet things.
Yeah,
But your interpretation makes way more sense.
That's possible, but I do think my interpretation makes more sense. Sorry.
No, that is possible, makes way though. More sense. But
because it cut from her eating the dessert to Nomi saying, this tastes weird. Then like, a second ago. And then Amini is like, we should talk about this medical thing that may or may not be happening to you. So they're kind of hiding from the police and Nomi's mother, I guess. I'm not sure if what Dr. Metzger talked about in the previous episodes is true or not. So that's happening. They meet up with people in a Japanese garden. I think I've actually been to that garden. I'm not even joking. I think I've actually been to that Japanese garden because all of Nomi's stuff is set in San Francisco. So, and there's a ton of Japanese gardens there, so maybe it wasn't the same one, but like, I love how international this show is, and I just feel more international because I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been there, I live there. But anyway, going back to this. So, yeah, sorry. Bit of a narcissist, I guess. But moving on to this. Nomi and Amanita meet up with two other people who give them information about how, you know, there's cops patrolling your house and blah, 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 blah. And again, we're talking about family, but in a different light.
Yeah.
How, in this case, Nomi's family are the people, you know, she met out, like, not her biological family.
Right, it's the family you choose, not the family you're born with.
Yeah, and again, I mean, with most things, family is a huge issue for most of these characters, I think. I don't think Leto ever talks about his family. But
no.
Other than him, I think everyone else has either major issues with their family or a very deep connection with their family.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is good. It's easy to expand each of the Sensei's worlds kind of beyond their own mind, but at the same time, I think family is really important for a lot of people, so it's something that we can all kind of relate to. So,
yeah, because it's such a universal theme, right? Because
we all have parents,
and if you don't, that probably has a huge impact on you too.
No, I meant like we literally all have parents.
Yeah, we literally all have parents. When the absence or presence of them is very important, like family is one of those universal themes, right?
Yeah.
So I find it, you know, I didn't think of it before, but I do find it interesting that Leto does not really have any connections to family that I've seen so far. So
the only thing else about Nomi is that, you know, when she's discussing and she talks about how she talks about impossibility and essentially that it's all relative and that it's...
Isn't that Amanita who says that?
Oh, no, just, like, in her plot line, yeah. Oh,
okay, yeah.
Impossibility is a kiss away from reality. And it was funny because I was watching that and I was like, you know, that kind of applies with Kala because maybe, you know, she is going to pursue romantic things elsewhere, or we're not really sure. And, you know,
Kala and Wolfgang are my OTP.
Right, exactly. And then the show transitions, boom, right back into Kala. And I'm like, oh, I picked up on that. I love when that happens. Where it's like you see a connection with another character in like one plot line, and then all of a sudden we're seeing that other character and they're like, hey, that was intentional. Like, you picked up on that. Good job. And I'm like, yes. I feel like I've just beaten. I've cracked the show's case.
Safe. So you're saying Kala's situation is kind of, it seems impossible to get out of, but it really isn't? Or it's impossible for her to meet Wolfgang, but it really isn't?
Well, it's that impossibility is a kiss away from reality. So, I mean, objectively, Kala and Wolfgang will never be together because it doesn't make any sense. But then if they kiss, then you never know what could happen, much like Nomi's relationship.
Wait, if they kiss, you never might know what would happen? I don't want to get into, like, spoilerific territory for the future episodes.
No, but the whole thing is that Nomi's relationship seemed impossible. You know, like, neither of them would have ever thought that it would be a reality. But then they kissed and they fell in love and happy, happy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, you know, maybe that could be applicable to Kala. Maybe she will find her man, whoever that may be, and kiss him and
Wolfgang.
And, you know, things will be happy, happy, even though it doesn't seem that way at this point.
Yeah. It just feels like whoever gets stuck with the darker plots are, like, stuck in the darker plots.
Very true.
And I'm like, please get out of this. I want a more lighthearted plot for you. I don't want your life to be doom and gloom forever.
True that.
But yeah, I just feel like, yeah, that's kind of how I feel about that. I think I'm pretty much out of notes. So if you wanted to talk about anything that we didn't get to,
Well, let's go back a little bit to Leto, because we keep touching on him, mm-hmm. but there are a few pieces which we kind of miss because we've only discussed him through other people, pretty much.
Yeah.
I mean, he got a much more lighthearted plot, especially even compared to his plots in previous episodes, which weren't exactly super heavy.
Right. They did deal with stuff like, oh, if he comes out and then this guy is trying to kill him because he's with this girl.
Yeah. But, you know, even for him, you know, so this is pretty lighthearted, and so he's essentially experiencing menstruation, and that's new for him, and so that's something.
Yeah, so he screws up his scene because he just keeps crying, and
I don't know how I don't know whether I like that or not, honestly.
That he kept crying.
No, because, like, on one hand, it's like, women are kind of badass because they deal with this, like, once a month. But then on the other hand, it's all like, women are crazy because they deal with this once a month. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, like, let me explain. So, because I did not pick up on that because I'm dumb, I thought what was going on was Sun was internally feeling really horrible and whatever, upset about having to make this choice, right? Between going to prison or basically sending her brother to prison. And I thought this kind of was just tearing her apart and that she wasn't letting it out, but then Leto was kind of experiencing the brunt of it. But I see that you're saying it's more physical, saying it's more, like, hormones and period and blah, blah, blah. So, like, I was still kind of unsure. I was, like, thinking, like, dang, like, this guy cannot handle what's going on with Sun. But that applies either way you interpret it. So, it's weird because it does kind of flip your expectations of, like, the, I guess, the macho Latino man or whatever. Yeah, I don't know. It was, and I just, like, now that you mentioned the period thing, everything makes sense to me because, like, I was so unsure what was going on. I really liked his exchange with Sun, though, in the car.
Yeah.
Because, like, I'm not shouting, like, you're not crying.
Yeah.
It was so perfect.
I feel like the two of them could be, like, BFFs. I don't know why.
Because they repress themselves all the time. Well, no, I wouldn't call Leto repressed. I think that's kind of more Sun's thing. But, like, just out of necessity, he has to kind of be repressed.
Yeah.
But I found Leto talking to Hernando on the car phone kind of similar to...
Did you say car phone?
Car phone! He was talking on the car phone.
Car phones are in the 90s.
Whatever.
He was using, like, Bluetooth
his
or
phone,
something.
His car to the phone, and he used it like a car phone. Whatever, Melissa. Anyway, he's talking to Hernando, whatever. And I like the way kind of Hernando's trying to give him support, similar to the way, like, Amanita is trying to support Nomi. It wasn't a super strong connection, but I kind of got that parallel from it.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything else going on with Leto, because I just feel like with his overall storyline, it's just kind of him... I guess it's like partially it's like him trying to grow as an actor, but mostly it's just kind of like... He either really screws up his scenes, or he does really well in his scenes... And then there's the whole closeted homophobia thing going on as a side plot.
Yeah.
And then maybe Daniela or whatever her name is has something going on too. So it's like, I'm not quite sure what his trajectory is.
Yeah.
I kind of see other people's trajectory.
Yes.
Like, Will is solving what's going on with Nomi and then the other person. Kala is probably going to try to get out of the marriage. Not sure what's going on with Riley. but Kathy, so we understand what's happening. I don't really know what's going on with Leto.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place. I mean, I really liked the dynamic that was established between the director and Leto. Because the director is like, he's hilarious. Like,
directing is hard, man.
Like, he just...
directing is so hard, because people are like that. People do not listen to what you want. And you're just like, it's the worst. Directing is awful.
But, like, the director's all, like, mayhem and chaos, and I'm like, yes, this is exactly what I want. And I just... it's so good. And then we did touch on this before, but I actually wrote down the quote, which is, art is like religion. For the believers, it's everything. But for everyone else, it's just a pile of stinking BS.
Yes.
That's some good-ish there.
That really is. It applies to so many things, like people's tastes. God knows how many YouTube comments I've seen on, like, old songs where some old fogey writes, this is real music, unlike that Justin Bieber you guys have nowadays. And I'm like,
yeah, oh my
okay,
God.
Guys, chill out. People, the older generation always hates on the younger generation's taste and style and music. And I'm just like, you gotta chill. Like, times are changing. Calm down.
I mean, but, you know, that's what we do. We're nothing if not predictable.
We view other people's art and taste as BS, as stinking BS.
Yeah.
It's great.
So, like, side note, I kind of want to see the whatever movie that Leto's making right now, I want to see it. Like, that sounds amazing.
Wouldn't that be great?
So
that should be the Sense8 movie. 6 seasons in a movie, the movie should be Leto's movie.
Like, that's probably kind of awesome. And so, like we get the action scene, which is intercut with Will's literal action scene, but it's just so good. Like, okay,
that was weird. We didn't talk too much about Will,
but
I was
at the end. But what?
What happened with Will? They were like, "Oh, it's the kid." Is it the kid he saved in the first episode?
I think so.
But then why was he running away? Ah, none of this makes sense.
I honestly have no idea.
It just felt like the whole let's run after this kid and nothing happens just seemed very anticlimactic and unnecessary.
I mean, it was good in the way that it was intercut with Leto's fake action scene, so I really liked that dynamic. But in terms of Will's, like, story, yeah, it's kind of pointless and useless and whatever.
Yeah, no, I like the intercutting. I just didn't get it, if that makes
sense.
You
know what I loved was there was the scene, or there was a shot where Leto is sliding across the floor. He's being pulled by a wire. He's on his knees, and his head is just, like, whipped all the way back. And, like, we're looking down on him.
It's a great scene.
It's like, so epic. It's just, like, not even that long. And it's like, epic, but it's absurd, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so good.
Part of me wonders, is it, like, the Wachowskis are making fun of their old films or something, because, like, it was very reminiscent of The Matrix insofar as there's a scene where Neo in the movie is just, like, firing a ton of guns.
That's a good catch,
like,
actually.
Sorry?
So that's a good catch.
No, all this marble and other stuff around the room is collapsing. Kind of like, I noticed Leto shoots a, what is it? I know he's shooting blanks, but, like, he shoots at this, like, art sculpture and it breaks into pieces. I remember very distinctly in The Matrix there was a scene like that where Neo's shooting and then pillars are crumbling and things like that. And, again, since we talked about it in one of my sci-fi classes back in university, we talked about how, you know, like, in a conventional movie or a show, right, you kind of film, the camera's, like, not supposed to be looking down or up at anything.
Mm-hmm.
A camera in a conventional film is like a person, right?
Right.
You're looking at things like a person would. Like, we're not looking up all the time, we're not looking down all the time. That's not how, that's just not how humans operate, I guess. But it's really interesting to see kind of use of, like, I guess vertical shots like that, because I know my professor, she was talking about this one scene in The Matrix, and she's like, what's different about this scene than the other scenes? And everyone in the class was like, we don't know? And she's like, this is how I know that I'm really old and you guys are really young, because you guys are used to vertical shots, but, like, this is, like, a new thing that was, like, in, like, whatever, kind of out of the box in the 90s. Mm. And then we were all like, oh, yeah, you're old. But yeah, we're used to, like, more, I guess, avant-garde, interesting kind of ways of filming, but traditionally you don't film, like, overhead shots like that, or, like, underneath shots, or, like, weird stuff like that. So, yeah, it was... part of me is thinking, maybe they're making fun of The Matrix, which is what they worked on in the 90s. Or maybe they're just paying homage to it or something. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? Shall we move on to Will, then? I don't know if we have anything else to talk about with Will.
Well, okay, so one thing that the director said at the very end of the shooting is that he has a hard-on that'll last all week. I don't know why. I really like the director.
He's crazy. He's
crazy, but in, like, the good kind of passion crazy. Like, if, like, he has, like, this conflict with Leto because Leto is having emotional issues right now. Yeah. And, you know, the director literally doesn't care at all. But, like, he's just great, you know?
Yeah. I just thought he's not going to get rid of Leto because Leto does good enough. It's like I said before, it just feels like Leto is either really good or really bad. So I feel like the director's keeping him on because, like, the good either balance or outweighs the bad when it comes to his scenes and stuff. But I can relate. Being a director is something else, man. It's annoying.
Yeah.
Any more notes on the show? Because I'm pretty much done.
I mean, we do spend a little bit of time with Will, and I really liked that Nomi got to hear, from her mother directly. That was really twisted.
It was
twisted. It was, like, awful, but, like, in a good way. Like, it was a really surprising moment that, you know, obviously could have really never come unless, you know, weird sensate stuff.
Yeah.
But,
and you know, Nomi hasn't heard her mother really say how she feels for real, like, in a while, probably, so.
Yeah.
It was good to get that despite, yeah, how twisted it was. I am hoping that Will is starting to understand that Nomi's mother is not an ally in the situation. So, like, he seems to have gotten that when he was like, her name is Nomi. I was like, that's right. You tell her, Will. You tell her. But yeah, I don't know. Even though I know I've said it again and again, this episode is, quote-unquote, a filler episode, I loved so much about it.
That's fair. I mean, nothing, like, super happened. I mean, I guess the biggest development would be with Kala.
And I guess sort of with, what's-his-face, Cavius.
That's true, too. Though, I mean, technically we left him and he has to take care of a bag. And we essentially learned that it was just a test, so he...
But now he's in
with
the
them.
Fold, yeah. Or whatever.
So, I mean, he's moving forward in that.
Yeah.
You know who I really like, who, like, it isn't really that important, but I just really like him, and I can't remember his name, is, Will's friend.
Oh, he's great. I love him, too.
Like, his line about, like, what happened to the old mafia, like, that is, like, literally my sense of humor.
Wait, did he say that in this episode?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because we were talking about the new mafia, and there's, like, what happened to the old mafia? That's, like, exactly what I would say. That's my sense of humor.
I like
humor.
His thing where he was like, you know, where he was like, oh yeah, this is the same kid, and like Will just gets up and leaves, and he's like, I thought you had paperwork? No?
Yeah.
No?
Like, okay. This kid is great. I like him.
No, I like him too. I mean, obviously he's not, I mean, he's still like police department Will, you're crazy.
Yeah.
That kind of a thing, but he's a good comic relief side character. I like him.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of these characters, like, they really fall into certain tropes.
Yeah.
But yeah. As long as you do it in a way that's interesting enough, I don't really mind that much, depending on...
Yeah, I feel like most of these people, most of the Senseis have, like, a sidekick or
sassy
sidekick or whatever.
Each person comes with their own sidekick. It's a buy one, get one.
I mean, I think some of them don't. Like, but when they don't, it's very, very clear and makes sense for the character. Like, Sun doesn't have a... We talked about this before, too. Like, Sun doesn't have a person to fall back on.
She has her dog.
The closest she has is the trainer, and the trainer is not some kind of sassy sidekick because he's a trainer.
Yeah. But she has her dog.
Her dog is not sassy, though. Her dog licks her foot. That's all it does.
Dogs are the best.
Yeah. I really like this show. I really, really like this show. And I'm so glad you told me about it and that we're watching it right now. I'm so happy about the show. I guess my last note is I've been trying to keep my, connections to other shows minimal. But in this episode at least, but I do need to throw this out there with the whole art is like religion thing. So I know I mentioned way back in the beginning, bookends, way back in the beginning of the episode, that we talked about how, you know, filmmakers love doing like artsy works about art or whatever. Right. So if you're looking for a recommendation for something that is about art but super not pretentious about it, and you could almost even ignore the fact that it's about art, I would recommend The Big Lebowski, because that film is so subtly about art without overtly being about art. It, like, it's pretty good. Personally for me, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is kind of okay, but slightly overrated. I think it's one of those films that gets better with time, though. I think the more you watch it, the more you like it. I've only seen it once.
Yeah, you're clearly an authority on the matter. I need to watch it again, because I probably enjoy
it a lot more. But, yeah, The Big Lebowski.
I've actually never seen it.
Yeah. You wouldn't... People think it's a film about bowling, but it's, like, secretly a film about art. It's really weird. Like that.
Okay.
I could explain more in depth, but I'm not going
to. That's probably for the best.
I'll talk more off the podcast if you're interested. But, yeah. I'm definitely looking forward to covering the next episode of Sense8.
Yay.
So any more notes from you, Melissa, or are you basically good?
I guess the only other thing was, like, when I first watched this episode, I was so nervous that Will and Leto were going to basically switch places, and Will was going to, like, accidentally shoot somebody because he's Leto, and he is thinking he's shooting blanks in an action scene.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh my god, this could go so wrong. I was nervous. And obviously it didn't. And I think we're kind of learning as we go along that although they're interacting and they're switching kind of places with each other, they don't lose their own agency in their cluster. You know what I mean?
Mm.
They're still...
They're not some, like, weird hive mind or something.
Yeah, exactly. And they're not... When they switch... They become, like, aware of their new locale and their, you know, it's more like they're, I don't know, they're not forming and fusing and...
They're not losing themselves. I mean,
finding the characters themselves.
But I did think it was interesting how the characters were talking about how, you know, I forgot who you were for a second.
Yeah.
So, it's weird because they kind of are fusing a bit.
Yeah.
Just a bit. I wonder, we have yet to see them interact face to face in real life.
IRL.
IRL. Or in TV world?
Right.
ITW? I really want to see that happen at some point. Mm-hmm. I know we have many more episodes to go. We're, like, barely halfway through, so I want to see them meet up in real life.
Yes.
OTP, Wolfgang and Kala, That's no dream for me anyway. But I want to see them meet up in real life and interact, because so far it's just been this astral projection to different countries thing, or across the country thing. So I am waiting for that to happen, because I'm just like, I'm tired of seeing these hallucinations. Like, meet in real life, guys. Come on. I think my prediction is that it's going to happen with Nomi and Will first, because they are geographically closer.
Yeah.
And plot-wise closer. So I hope this happens soon. Yeah, that's pretty much all I have to say about this episode.
That's about it. I mean, I enjoyed it, but that's all. That's all, folks.
Okay, so, guys, please like us on iTunes. Give us, like, I don't know, 5 stars and a review. That would be super awesome. It would help us out so much. Or, you know, I guess you could leave a 1-star review with no comment, but, you know.
You know that, what? That'd do whatever you think that we deserve. But we definitely deserve 5 stars. It's like the people in the
show say, right? You have a choice. You have a choice. You can leave a review or you cannot leave a review. But it would be really awesome if you did leave us a review. So please do that. You can, you know, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, follow us on Tumblr, all that jazz. You can email us. You can email us hate mail. You can email us fan mail. I don't know. The choice is yours. So, yeah. So, I guess the next episode will be Sense8 Episode 6. And then we'll cover a movie and then keep going, bouncing back between movies and Sense8. So,
we'll finish Sense8 eventually.
It's been a long journey, guys. It's been a long journey. We're almost at the end.
No, we're not even close. Next week we'll almost be halfway.
Is it a 12 episode or 13 episode?
I think it's 13, but don't quote me on that.
Let's see. Okay, so yeah, we will move on to the next episode of Sense8, and I will see you later. Bye.
Bye-bye.